Thank you for tuning into the Grow Community podcast. My name's Liam, and in today's episode, we're going to be speaking with Dave McLaughlin. A longtime member, Dave has made his way through the program and is now the East Coast Region Manager. We are very grateful to have Dave share his journey and experiences with us. Hope you enjoy.
I was married at the time, and we had a baby in the house. And then I can remember my wife moving out and going to stay with friends because, I must have been acting out and she might have felt unsafe. And a friend came and stayed with me and just made sure I didn't get myself in trouble or hurt myself. Yeah, and like I say, two mates came along and they bundled me in the car and took me into town. But the feelings at the time was I didn't really know that I didn't know I was sick. I was that sick I didn't know I was sick. I thought, that this was, normal behaviour, really, to be, at times, feeling really powerful and some sort of messiah and it was like really weird when I look back on it now. But at the time it seemed quite reasonable, but... It wasn't at all.
You met with the police officer, and then they took you to hospital.
Yeah, they took me into Richmond Clinic, and I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who these people were. I thought, I was very paranoid, and I thought they could read me mind.
Yeah,
I had this terrible delusion that people could read me mind if I looked at them. I wouldn't look at people when I spoke to them. But anyway, I thought they were trying to, took me to somewhere to kill me, so I genuinely feared for my life.
Yeah.
But really, they were trying to do their best to help me. And I ended up being labelled a non-compliant patient and they had to be put on a community treatment order and spent most of that first 2 weeks in the special care area or high dependency unit. And spent a lot of time, waking up occasionally in the little room with carpet on the walls because I wouldn't take my meds. Yeah. They'd give me medication. I thought they were trying to poison me. So in the end, it would take like five of them to hold me down to medicate me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you, you start like being a compliant?
No.
No, you were...
No, I bounced out of that paddy wagon. Kicking and screaming, really.
Yeah. And so what was it, the point where you started to have some sort of control, like you...
Some insight. Initially it was a bit of a delusion because I kept hassling, every now and then you have these lucid moments. I'd come to and think, where the hell am I? And, I picked up some Grow pamphlets in amongst that time too, but... every day I can remember trying to talk to the registrar in there about getting out of here. I kept saying to him, I'm going to get better much quicker sitting on the veranda in the sun with my dog at home than I will in here.
Yeah.
And after 3 or 4 days of this and me arguing with him back and forwards about not wanting to go home or wanting to go home and him not wanting to send me home, he just stood up and he got really angry with me and he said, you're not going anywhere, you're crackers.
Yeah, right. And that was the phrase?
Yeah, exactly like that. And I thought, oh, gosh, what do I need to do? I need to pretend to be well or something to get out of here. Yeah. So there was this crazy kind of insight that I just started to put on a good front.
Yeah.
And
Okay. Yeah. So you were like, hang on, I can pretend to be well to get...
That's it, yeah. Yeah, so but in the end, my family were in Sydney and this was in Lismore, and Dad was working at Callum Park, a big psych institute down there, and they ended up getting me transferred down to Callum Park in Sydney, and I was supposed to be admitted there, but by the time I got there, I kind of knew what not to say.
Yeah, right.
Right, I was very guarded about it, and I was interviewed by a nurse and a doctor. And I said all the right things and talked my old man into taking custody of me.
Yeah.
So they released me to dad's custody and didn't hospitalise me. I think they'll fall anyway.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I heard when I walked in there was some poor woman trying to bash the door down in an isolation cell. And I thought, I'm not staying here.
Yeah, it's not a very welcoming bell to arriving to a place of recovery.
No, I've got to get out of here. Yeah. So we went home and Mum totally freaked out. So by the time I got home, it was about midnight, and there was this big family argument on the front step. You know, he can't stay here. Or, well, I said that he could, and I couldn't stay there. You know, my family was scared of me, you know, because I was acting so crazy. And in the end, the Glebe crisis team, the mental health crisis team, came and picked me up, and they took me, and I stayed in a respite house in Burwood in Sydney.
Would they?
And I spent about 3 weeks there. Mm.
Was it easy to work with them because they're a bit more of a dedicated team? Sort of generalist that you might find at a hospital, or was it still a pretty difficult process?
I was starting to settle down a bit. By then, the medication had, you know, really slowed me down and helped me to, you know, get a bit of control over my thinking, you know. So I started cooperating with help. You know, that was quite a turning point, really. I thought, I'll just do whatever, you know, needs to be done now so I can get home. Because there I was. I've actually, you know, been dragged out of my home or from home into hospital in the Northern Rivers and then taken down to Sydney.
Down to Sydney, yeah.
So, and then I thought, I just want to get home now. So I just started to do whatever I needed to do to get home. But I remember staying in a respite house. And my thinking started to change because I kept a journal of all that time. And I can see in that journal, even now, I can see that it says, you know, things like, I need to be positive, I need to change, I need to get control of these crazy ideas going on in my head. So at some level, I knew, you know, my thinking was off, and I couldn't trust, you know, the way I was thinking.
What got you to start the journal? Was that just part of the treatment that the various places were giving you, or that was something that you just did independently, or was it a word of wisdom from somebody else? Or
no, I just started doing it. I just felt a need to get what was in my head on paper, because I was in this big respite house. Like, it was like a huge two-story place, and I was the only one there. It was quite a scary old
really
building. Quite a scary old building. And they would, and the crisis team would come and check on me to make sure I was taking my meds and the rest of it, but I had a lot of time on my hands. So I started, I thought I need to get fit. So I started walking in the morning and, you know, doing some exercise and feeding myself properly. And, yeah, I just started to take some little steps to look after myself. Yeah. So I was there for a few weeks. But during that time, I had a grow pamphlet with me.
Yeah.
I picked up a heap of pamphlets when I was in Richmond Clinic in Lismore. And at times, like I said before, we have these lucid moments, and I can remember looking at the pamphlet I had the 12 steps in it.
Yeah.
And the eighth step says, you know, we learn to think by reason rather than by feelings and imagination. And even as sick as I was, I wondered what that was about. How do you do that? You know, so I think there was some part of me knew that my imagination had taken over. Because it seemed to be everything I imagined I thought was real.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it took a couple of weeks before I started to doubt and question that, you know. So I thought, what's this grow about? I asked about it in hospital, and none of the nursing staff could tell me what it was about.
Yeah.
But while I was there, the local field worker, Angela Darlow, came in and gave what they call a hospital orientation to the patients, and I was brought out of the special care area. There was one nurse that kind of looked after me. And she took me out of this meeting and sat me down and said, you need to hear what this lady's got to say, you know.
Wow.
And it was a big group. I was still in my jammies. They wouldn't let me have me clothes because I escaped twice while I was there.
Yeah.
Okay. I kept running away.
Back to the
anyway, the nurse, Paul, she sat there and kept me in the meeting. And then I don't remember much of what Angela had to say, but I remember getting a big hug at the end of the meeting, you know. And that touched me because I felt pretty worthless, you know. And that kind of got me a little bit interested. And then I read all the pamphlets. And when I got back from Sydney, I was off my community treatment order by then. I had an appointment with a, you know, community nurse, mental health nurse. And I just had to turn up there and my treatment order was finished. But between then, you know, getting home and then I went to my first meeting on the following Monday. Got home Friday, started Grow the following Monday. And I wasn't sure what it was about. I was still pretty confused. I think I was actually asked, you know, is there anything, you know, what brought you along today, Dave? And I think I said something like, oh, look, I'm really confused. Just leave me alone.
Yeah,
you
know?
I just want to listen. And the group was good. They left it at that. They let me just keep coming back and listen. Mm. If I'd been forced to speak, because one of my greatest fears was public speaking.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, but if I was forced to speak, I probably would have run a mile.
Yeah, it would have been too much.
Yeah, so I just went to the meetings. I missed my third meeting because in the Grow commitment it says after 3 meetings you become a committed grower. Well, I didn't know you could take up to 3 months to make that choice at the time. And I had trouble committing to anything back then. And so I stayed away from my third meeting. And then
dodge the badge gift.
And then someone rang me up during the week, Mary Cowan. She was one of the leaders in the group, and you know, just asked me how I was going, and you know, and said I'd be welcome to come back anytime.
Yeah,
there's no pressure really. Yeah, and then I went back, but you know, I thought, looks like, you know, I could identify with the testimonies being shared.
Yeah.
So that kind of kept me interested too. I felt like this was a group that understood where I'd been.
Mm.
And then after a while, it started to, you know, the penny drop that, look, this is probably the best help I can get. These people, it actually works. These people have recovered.
Yeah.
Look at them now. I mean, Mary's testimony was really powerful. She'd been much sicker than me for much longer. And there she was, this, you know, beautiful, caring human being. So that inspired me. So I'm inspired by others to keep coming. And then the commitment thing, I thought, geez, I'll give it 6 months.
Yeah.
And I'll just do it. All right. Whether I like it or not, I'm going to go every week. So I did. I knuckled down and went every week. I had a good doctor. You know, he helped me as well. He was very holistic sort of doctor. So between that and the program and the people I was, you know, with in the group, I started to get better. You know, I just chipped away at the old self. I accepted that I needed to change, you know. The way I was living and the way I was thinking and feeling led me into the back of that paddy wagon.
Yeah.
So something had to change. So I think accepting change was, you know, that I needed to change, and this was a way to do it.
Yeah.
It was like there was a toolbox here, the blue book.
Mm.
You know, coming from an engineering background, I thought of it as, oh, here's my toolbox.
Yeah.
That can help me fix things up, you know. Yeah. So I started to share a bit in group. Took about, you know, 6-7 weeks. I started to talk about what was going on at home. When I... One of the people in the group pointed out to me that, oh, geez, you must be a difficult bloke to live with.
Yeah, they say the harsh truths, yeah.
And I thought, you're right, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that got me thinking about, there's a little principle in the blue book that says regard for others, you know. You know, the way I'm feeling, basically says, you know, the way I'm feeling and seeing things doesn't give me the right to treat others badly.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I started to think about, you know, how my impact on what was going on at home. Yeah. And, you know, it was a big group, so if I didn't have a chance to share, I'd pick something up from one of the other leaders and I'd go home and started working on it. So, yeah, I remember one morning sitting on the veranda reading Don't Sabotage. And at the end of Don't Sabotage, it says, so be 100% grower. You know, stop sabotaging, be 100% grow. And I thought, geez, what does that look like, you know?
Yeah.
So I did. I started, I'd get up in the morning and I'd get me books out and I'd sit down and do some program study, you know? Or I'd start with, you know, the act of surrender and just if I was given a part of the program, I would try and learn it and commit it to memory and then look for opportunities during the week to put it into practice. Yeah. So that's the way I just chipped away at that old self.
Yeah.
In time, I got on top of the the illness, if you like, the delusions. They were still there, but I was debunking them. You know, every now and then I'd be talking to someone. I had this idea that they're reading me mind, but I'd say no, that's not true. I'd tell myself that, you know. And so once you got insight, you can get control of those sorts of things, or push it to the fringe, or ignore it. So that's what I did. So that's why in the blue book, there's a couple of readings in there on how to control unhealthy thoughts, because that's what a lot of the symptoms were, really unhealthy thinking. And the other one is healthy thought and personal thought, and that talks about treating the disturbed thinking like static on the radio and not listening to it, just pushing it to the fringe. And then over time, those ideas drop away, and which they did. You know, after about 8 months in Grow, I can remember again, you know, sitting there thinking, geez, that thought that people can read my mind isn't there anymore. You know, it might just sort of slowly tapered off as I kept debunking it and pushing it aside and diverting my attention, you know.
Yeah.
Because that was another key little part of the program, it's called How to Beat Maladjustments. Divert your attention, suggest yourself positively, take positive action.
It just became less and less at the forefront of your thinking.
So it was about change, and changing, you know, I mean, the three basic changes, you know, was key as well, you know, because it changed your thinking and talk, change of behaviour, and change of relationships. So, yeah, I had to really work on changing my thinking. And then I actually, in changing my thinking, my feelings started to settle. They weren't so intense. I had more control over my feelings.
Well, and the because I was, it was interesting that you said the when you first went to the group, the testimonies were really a very important thing, because you're looking at somebody. Well, I mean, in this case, it was more unwell than you, but in front of you, a really well balanced, helpful person who's trying to bring you into the community as well. Yeah, so that would have, I can imagine you've actually done that for quite a lot of people as well. But
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you have. Come on. But you're at this point, you're attending the group and you're starting to get more control over. Was it? Have you been able to stay fairly on course, or is it a continued journey?
The first couple of years, it was a bit up and down. But I found that I would resume quickly and without fuss when something went down. You know. The disturbed thinking, the illness side of it, kind of I got on top of that. But then once I was on top of that, then I had to deal with the last, you know, whatever it was, 20 or 30 years of habits, and, you know, whatever caused me to get that.
Because
I used to think, oh, it's just that last, you know, 6 months of drug abuse and isolation that caused me to break down. Well, no. The maladjustments, the bad habits started a long time before that. You know, the further I got into Grow, the more I could understand what led me to needing Grow.
Yeah.
You know, initially I was very focused on just that last, you know, several months. But as, you know, just gave me, as I got into it, got a better understanding of mental health, got a better understanding of myself. I could see that some of the stuff went back to childhood. You know, there was some, you know, in childcare, there was some abuse. There was, I was in a loving family, but there was, you know, some immaturity there. But, you know, they're only young themselves. At 15, I joined the Navy, so I went into living in this really, you know, my adult years were spent growing up in this quite a tough environment, you know, a real man's environment with, you know, all the maladjustments and bad habits that come with that too, you know. So I had to change, and that's it. And I accepted it. You know, initially I didn't accept it. Some years before that breakdown, I went to a doctor and said, oh, I think I'm mad, you know, because I nearly had a relationship breakdown because of the way I was behaving. And he, I talked to him about what was going on, and he said, oh, you just got to have, you know, a problem of anger, you know. And I brought a book, a tape, and thought everything was right for about a fortnight, but nothing changed really, you know. I'd had a bit of insight and a little bit of hope there, but I hadn't really done anything to cause any great change. Yeah.
If you had just to sort of finish off that segment on, if you were to give advice, you know, and probably you wouldn't have taken advice at the very start of before you joined Grow, but if there was someone in your situation of sort of delusions and stuff like that, what would you say to them? Like, what's the real key wisdoms, the ones that have resonated with you your whole life? Is there any?
Well, it's a little grey wisdom. Yeah. You know, that you alone can do it, but you can't do it alone.
Yeah, that's the...
You know, I just wouldn't have been able to do it on my own. But being with a community of people who understood where I'd been and what I needed to do to get well was key. That's what I'd recommend. And persevere, you know. I see people come to Grow and they judge it. You know, they make a judgment pretty quickly. But I'd say, you know, give it a few meetings, 3 or 4 meetings to see whether it's, you know, right for you.
Let the concept sink in and let the penny drop as well.
Give it time. Friendship first. Meet some people, get to know people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, have a look at the program and see what it has to offer as well.